Dr. Stephanie Ryan, thank you for coming on the podcast today. I'm excited to talk to you.
Thanks. I'm excited to talk with you too.
So you are an educator, a teacher, author. You've written a bunch of books, and you know, your passion seems to be in teaching kids science, right? And the importance of really just getting that involved in the household with parents and making it a part of like kids' world, you know, for as early age as possible to really get that ingrained in kids' heads. And I think that that's great because science is awesome. I mean, I was a big science nerd as a kid. You know, I did well. I loved doing all the experiments and seeing how it applied to real life. And there's so many cool fields, right? And so it's exciting to be able to talk to you. And today we're going to talk about like a bunch of different things, you know, how technology helps with it, where the world's going, and how parents can, you know, start teaching their kids science or doing little experiments with them and getting that excitement going. So I'm looking forward to our conversation today. So how about we start off, I'll just ask a quick question. Like, how did you get into the science field? Like, what drew you into it?
My dad, when I was growing up, was an engineer, and he really pushed science and math. In school in general, it was very important to do well in school. And I grew up in a time that was really focused on women in STEM. And so there were a lot of programs for girls my age, and that I just kind of went into those naturally. And what really drew me to it was my sophomore year in school. I didn't know how to do chemistry, and I loved that. I finally had a class that wasn't just memorizing, and it was hard, and it challenged me, and I loved that it challenged me. Mm. So it's funny that I picked the thing that was the hardest for me, but I found it very interesting. And a lot of that was due to the teacher I had. He definitely challenged us. If we knew something, he would be like, okay, now apply it. And it was just really fun to do that.
Yeah, that's amazing. And kudos to you for being like, oh, this is difficult. This is what I want. You know, usually people go the other way where they're like, this is hard. I don't want any of it. You know,
that's something my husband and I both are really trying to instill in our 4-year-old. He's good at puzzles, and he will just keep putting together the same puzzle over and over and get really good at it. And then we'll have a harder puzzle and he'll say, I don't want to do this. I don't know how to do it. And it's like, but that's why it's fun, because the more difficult it is, the more satisfaction you have at the end of it. And so we're trying to get him to see that and not give up.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great lesson, right? Because it doesn't matter what you do in life or what path you go on, life's going to throw some lovely challenges your way to make sure that, you know, you're not staying complacent at anything. So it's good. And so was chemistry like the stream that you really took to the most?
I really liked biology as well. Mm. I'm honestly not sure why I went the chemistry instead of biology route, because I did take a lot of biology courses and I love human genetics and things like that. So I'm not sure. I know that in my postgraduate school career, I've done a lot of biology and chemistry. So I think I don't know why I picked it.
Well, fair enough. And you know, I guess they're not all that separate, right? Like, we tend to demarcate them as separate subjects. But when it comes down to it, like, biology involves chemistry at that level. And you could even go into physics if you go down deep enough. And math is always part of all of it. So it's all connected in the end, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's why I love making sure that parents see those connections just in things around them, and especially that math component. There are a lot of things you do that are math components in your daily life with your kids that you may not have thought they were math, but it's math. And if you highlight that, it'll help them with those skills.
Yeah, because like, you know, I remember at school, like for me, math was always, I was lucky, so I could do math, like, you know, fairly well. But it always seemed like just a arbitrary kind of study, right? Where it's like, oh, you're just learning to solve equations or calculate angles or do this or that, but it's like, yeah, but who cares? You know, like what am I learning here? Whereas even in science or biology, at least you're learning about the world that you know, right? And so what's your sort of approach in sort of talking to parents about the importance of math?
It's the same as the importance of science. It's that maybe you had a bad experience with it, but that doesn't mean that your child has to. And you actually use math a whole lot more often than you think you do. At the grocery store, like when you buy your groceries or you calculate sale prices or tax or you make a recipe. My favorite one to use for parents is recipes. Those are ratios. And you can really get the pattern by having your child do one part to each of the parts and then just keep repeating it. So you can see that ratios are a pattern as well. But I think that even science can be viewed that way too, that it's just a fact. And if all we're approaching, and I know when I was in school, that's what we did a lot of the time, was you just memorized your fact or you memorized the numbers and this is what you do. But if we approach it with our kids, that these are things around us and let's figure them out, it's just so much more powerful than a fact in a book because it sticks with them better.
Right. And I suppose it's also true that, like, you know, you don't need to know necessarily yourself as a parent all the answers to this stuff. It can be a joint journey of like, let's figure it out together. And that's a great lesson for kids as well, because, you know, it sort of teaches that, like, okay, well, first of all, you know, not every adults don't know everything, and that's fine, and you won't when you're there either. And so it's that process of being able to say, like, okay, well, here's the stuff, or here's what we do know, and here's what we want. So how do we make our way to get there and find the answer? And, you know, working together, like, also, I mean, I'm sure it's a lot of fun to do it that way, right? And whether it's...
It is, yeah.
No,
go ahead. Once you get over yourself.
Yeah.
So there's that part that you want to be the authority figure with your kid and you want them to think you know more than you do. Yeah. So it's hard sometimes to say you don't know something. But I know it's more normalized in the kids today because they see that we ask Siri and Alexa things and we ask that, you know, it's like, let's look that up. Well, let's YouTube that. And it's a very different generation than what we had when I was in school. And so hopefully when my son, if he becomes a parent, he will feel more comfortable not knowing the answer in front of his child because I've struggled so much with it.
Yeah. No, I'm sure that's a difficult, you know, thing to deal with. Like, I don't have any kids myself, but I can imagine that, like, you don't want to, as the, you know, person or couple who's responsible for, like, educating and teaching and, you know, raising kids up, you don't want to be in the position of like, I don't know what to tell you here. Now I was the kind of kid who always asked, you know, questions that no one really had answers to, like about like the meaning of the universe and how does this work and that and all these like complicated things. And, you know, fair play to my parents for putting up with it and trying their best to answer the questions, but it was before the time of being able to say like, oh, Google it, or we can find the answer pretty easily. It was more just like, I don't know, or you got to go ask someone else or something like that, right? So technology is really like a huge deal now with that kind of thing.
Very much so. Like every single day on our way to and from daycare, my son is in pre-K daycare, and he asked me a question about something he saw in the street or in the sky or something. And at least once a day, we go home and look it up because I'll be like, you know, I'm gonna have to look that up while you're a school buddy. That is a great question. I've never thought of that. And he asked me yesterday, did you think I just didn't know this? And I said, no, I've never thought to ask it. Like, that is how cool of a question this is.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even ever have the notion to think of that. So we look things up all the time, and at first it was tough. It was like, I don't know how to do this. And during the pandemic, a lot of parents, they were home doing stuff they weren't comfortable with, you know, like math and science and even reading. Some of the books kids had to get through were pretty intense. So it's just something that we all had to struggle with. But I think that once you get past that hump of that struggle, that like, oh, I don't have to know all the answers, I'm just here to help them learn, I think that that helps open it up a little bit.
Yeah, put your ego aside for a second and just see if you can find the answer instead of, you know, making one up or, you know, shutting the question down. But it's interesting how kids ask those kinds of questions, right? Where you're just like, how did you even think of that? Like, that's just never occurred to me or anyone I know to even ask that kind of a question. But then you do, you look it up on Google and you're like, oh, no, people have asked this question before. I just didn't get there. You know?
The one yesterday, we saw a tree that didn't have any leaves. And it's summer, so there definitely should be some leaves on it. And I said that I thought it might be dying. And he asked me how I knew that from no leaves. And so we started talking about how the green and the leaves helps the plant grow because of photosynthesis, just like super basic because he's four, but just like that helps it get its food. And I'm like, so if it doesn't have the green, it's not helping it grow. So something's wrong. And he asked me, what happens to the trees that have purple leaves all the time? And I was like, it's a great question, and I know it's somewhat related to photosynthesis, but off the top of my head, I actually don't know, so that is on my list of things to look up.
Yeah, I suppose it's a good question. I mean, I don't know either. Like, I'm trying to think of purple-leaved trees, you know, or where I see it. And I mean, you know, the other thing about it is that, like, nature doesn't always follow logic as much as you would think it does, right? I mean, it does if you understand it fully. But from the sort of high level, you're like, this doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, we have a tree in the garden that gets much less water than another tree of the exact same kind, and yet is so much bigger. And I'm like, I don't understand. Like, this doesn't make any sense to me. I'm not saying it's not real, but I'm like, how's this possible? You'd think that the more water and food you give to the tree, the bigger it will grow. But it turns out that that's not the case. And it's fun to be able to, you know, have questions like that and to take notice.
Well, and the cool thing too is that let's say you're a kid and you had that question. And then instead of just me telling you what photosynthesis is and giving you an equation, which is what a lot of kids learn photosynthesis that way, you got to go look it up and you figured out why your tree versus a different tree grew at different rates. And you learned that. That would stick with you so much more than just what you read in a book.
Right, because it means more, right? There's that, you attach that side of it in your memory of being like, oh, well, I had this really, I had this question that I wanted answers to. And then when you find the answers, you're like, I understand now. And then that sticks in rather than just being like, well, just memorize the stuff that you should know about things, you know?
Yeah, and then you also are able to apply it. Because you've now used it. You didn't just memorize it. You have used it to explain something, and you're more likely then to be able to explain something else. So like, let's say then you have a vegetable garden and you notice that your corn is not growing as well as your tomatoes. And it's something to do with how much shade there is. You are able to go in and be like, well, this was this way with the tree in my garden. Maybe it's something similar. Let's see how that works. And so they've got this, they're more able to ask questions because they're used to it. And then they're using science to help them answer it instead of here's science. And it becomes more a part of everything around them. And I think that's so much more powerful than just reading it in a book like I did.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that application of it is huge, right? Like, for me at least, and I think for, as far as I know, you know, my friends and things like that, like, the most fun classes were always the ones where we did stuff. So the experiments or the just some sort of like application of the principles that you're learning, instead of just being like, memorize it and write it down on the test to get a good grade. It's like, yeah, okay, but I don't remember any of that stuff. But what I do remember, you know, 10, 15 years later, are the, like, just the experiments that we did in class, you know, with, like, I mean, I don't know if they still do, like, dissection stuff, you know, it's probably...
And I remember all of that because we got to choose which organisms we'd like to learn about and which ones we wanted to dissect, and it just got much more out of that. And I can still remember doing that. And I can remember body parts because of that. And so it's so powerful to have those experiences instead of here's a diagram, memorize it.
Yeah. And also, and I mean, you know, for me, like, the interesting thing about learning like chemistry was also like doing chemical experiments, right? And doing stuff and seeing how you can create things like batteries and I mean, I'm having a hard time remembering now, but like really young, I suppose you do things in science like the baking soda volcano and, you know, just being able to do things that seem quite magical because you're like mixing these two things together and all of a sudden it creates this thing out of nowhere, seemingly, right? And then that principle you can then sort of extrapolate and apply to the other areas to be like, oh, well, the whole world's molecules, atoms and molecules, and everything's an interaction and a play with form. And, you know, so much of it is real and relevant, right? And I suppose that's the point that is often overlooked or is missed in the classroom, is that you're not just studying it for the sake of studying it. You're studying this knowledge that's been learned and accumulated over time through years of experimentation to be like, oh no, this explains the world, right? Like, it's an amazing thing that I think is, you're right, is overlooked a lot. And so I'm glad that, you know, there's people like you going out and being like, hey, teach better science, you know?
I think too, the more so now than when I was a kid, but we look for these skills too that it's teaching, because I feel like, I can't remember where I read this, but like it was most of the jobs that we're training kids for don't exist yet because the technologies don't exist yet. And so we're really just teaching them how to think and interact with their world, how to ask questions, find patterns. And we're teaching them these skills, and we can teach them the content with it, but really the content is kind of secondary to some of it. So it's the fact that they feel comfortable asking questions, setting up an experiment that makes sense, being able to consume media, but understanding a bias and what counts as a claim, evidence, and reasoning, and things like that. So it's, I think we have the opportunity in science to do all those things, which really benefits everybody.
Yeah, and it's super important too, like particularly on the point of like, you know, understanding what information you're taking in and where it's coming from and what it means is huge too in these days of like, you know, just an overload of information from everywhere, and being able to differentiate, you know, an opinion from an experiment, from a fact or a theory or whatever it may be, and to be able to say like, okay, well, do I have the skills to be able to like fact check this essentially? If nothing other than just understanding where it came from, right? And like reviewing the sources.
Yeah, and to see what science really looks like to do it. And so cookbook laboratories, which is what I'm pretty sure you probably had, where we knew what the answer was going to be, and then your answer got compared to it of whether you got, like, there's a right answer. A lot of labs now are design your own to figure this out. And that's even more powerful because the teacher isn't just going to say, like, did you put an X here? Like, you actually had to design it and you had to understand what you were doing, and it actually helped you understand something. And yeah, it's interesting. I'm excited to see, because that's a fail. Like, I looked at that as failure in school. So I wasn't as close to the, I'm an analytical chemist, so if I'm not close to the right answer, that's a failure. And it, I think that you can see that in the pandemic. Like, any new information that comes out and you revise a hypothesis and you test new information, it looks like, oh, look, they failed. And that's not it at all. And so we're not used to doing science in public. And so that's something that, let them figure that out. Like, I mixed baking soda and vinegar, and I measured it and weighed it to see what it was, and it lost mass. How does that happen? And it's like, well, did you close your system? That is a mistake you made. Like, let's redo this and see how you can get better at things.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And it's an important point, too, because a lot of people, and it's understandable where it comes from, right, in the age of, like, with the pandemic, let's say, and, you know, as the science evolves, the operating hypothesis changes, right? And often contradicts or seemingly contradicts previous versions of what, you know, people thought it was. It's like, yeah, that doesn't mean that you just discount everything because you're moving forwards, right, in that progression. It's like, no, like, this is how science works, is it you move one step at a time, And then once you get a step forwards, you can see why the previous step didn't work so well. But it doesn't mean that you have to discount everything because there's some change in how things go, right? And I guess that that's a yeah. lesson that kids should learn at some point, is that there's also isn't always exact answers to things, particularly if there's no knowledge or understanding about it, right? And COVID's a good
example.
And
that's much of science. So if you Absolutely. Think about it, in school, I didn't ever think that there were people discovering new science, because it's not what we talked about. We only talked about yeah. people from hundreds of years ago that discovered these things, and this is the way things work. And so letting kids see that, look, there is a scientist who's trying to figure this out. Like, no one knows the answer, and that's their life, as they are figuring this out. Like, that's really cool. Yeah. And I just don't think we don't approach it that way. And then as scientists, we're not as transparent when we talk about it to the public. So I think that scientists have a long way to go of changing the way they talk to each other mm-hmm. and to the public. Those should not be the same.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it's also hard if you don't have experience in the field to even know where to, you know, place your bet, so to speak. Because, I mean, if you're looking at like the latest science on a particular thing, like let's say COVID, just as an example, for me as an uneducated scientist, I'm like, well, it's really hard for me to know what's good information and not good information, right? Even if they come from reputable sources, it's like, yeah, but I mean, I can look at the experiments they did and the chances are I'll be like, yeah, that makes sense. You know, I can follow the logic, but there's still something missing in that communication of being able to make it accessible to people who don't have an expertise in that field, right? And do
Definitely.
You think that, is that the responsibility of the scientists, or where do you think that lies?
I think that I personally, oh, you're going to get me in trouble. I think that it lies with the scientist a little bit. But there are people who are science communicators, like myself and others who are out there, that's our main job that we do, is help translate things for people. So if that's not their jam and that's not their skill, or they're not interested in that, I think that's fine. But they need to be more careful when they talk to the public, because sometimes if you use words that people don't understand, they are going to tune out and make their own judgment. And it could have been easy to describe it as you would to like a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old. And you could have done it, but you didn't. And so like there are opportunities for us to definitely be more transparent and open to the public instead of using jargon. Anytime people use jargon or acronyms, I'm always like, could you please spell that out for us, what that means? Because we don't all know.
Yeah.
And that's not a fair assumption. So.
No, that's true. And I also didn't mean to suggest that like we blame scientists for that. Like, no, I was just wondering like where you thought we can improve that communication line. Right. And also, of course, people don't have all the skills, as you say.
Right. And I think that so I went up in an education program, learning sciences. So we focused on a lot of, it was interdisciplinary. So we had education courses, psychology, sociology, and then whatever your main area was. And mine was chemistry. So I had all this coursework that goes around all of this. So I have a different view of when I do things. So I think that, graduate students should take some education classes, because they're going to be teaching college kids. And if you've never taught, it's not just you walk in a room and you dump information. There are good methods and bad methods. So I think that is one thing that we could do better. And another is that we should have science communication classes. I know that's something that is starting to happen. American Chemical Society has workshops on it a lot. And I know that a lot of the recent conferences end up having some things about that as well, is science communication has really come to the forefront, especially during the pandemic. And I think that there's room for growth for everybody. And that's a skill that I think could be a great, like, one credit class of where you just talk about that.
Yeah.
Especially for people who've only ever taken science classes. They've never taken an education class or a communication class.
Right. And it's also, I think it comes down to that bit of like, well, you don't know what you don't know, right? And so if you've never done anything in the education field, you don't know how much you don't know about it or how to communicate. You're like, no, well, I understand it, so I can just tell people about it. And it's like, well, maybe you have some natural talent or you're very good at it, but also maybe there's a lot of areas that you just haven't thought about that would help you communicate to a broader audience of people, right? Or an easier way of understanding things.
One of the things that drives me nuts anytime anyone says is they say, well, when I retire, I think I'll go teach. As if teaching isn't its own profession with its own skills and own background. And it's like, oh yeah, you're just going to walk in and teach. Like, I get it if you're going to do like a specialized course to talk about your career and like something you're an expert in. But to like go in and teach like 101 level things to people, like, no, you don't just walk in and do that. There are skills involved. But then again, I am getting into different social medias with my things, and I expect to be a TikTok expert in like a week. Like, oh yes, I'm going to master this platform. This will happen. But why do I think that? Because it's the same concept of something that I think that I don't know what I don't know, and I think that I know it all.
No, it's true. I mean, I've had the same situation, like, you know, when I started this podcast, I was like, oh, you know, I get what it means. Like, I get what's involved in it. And then you sort of do a little bit and you're like, oh shit, I know nothing. I mean, I can have a conversation with someone, but that's just step one, you know? Like, the rest of it is really, I mean, it's a huge world, right? And so to be able to, you know, put your ego aside and be like, okay, well, I'm going to learn now. Like, I'm happy to accept that I don't know these things and try and learn them instead of shutting it down and being like, no, I know, I'm gonna make it work the way I know, and if it doesn't, then it's that's their fault, or it's the system's fault, or it's, you know, bad luck or something like that, instead of being able to be like, okay, well, how can I improve the gaps in my knowledge, right? Which I think is
right.
Also
and who
happening.
Else can I reach out to? Like, right. Why reinvent the wheel if you don't have to? With technology, we're a global society. We could really reach out and talk with experts anywhere. And so why sit down and put yourself through that if you could work with somebody, get the advice you need, and just make something better for everybody? That's what it's something that I think you're right. It's a mindset of whether or not it's I feel like I can grow and learn something, or if I am set and I don't need anything else to do something.
Yeah. No, and technology has really opened up a world of everything, of information and access to people, right? I mean, you know, I was actually wanting to talk to you about this stuff, about like how much information is out there for people to learn at their own whim at like the highest level. Like, it's not even basic stuff. I mean, you have like, there's tons of like free online university level courses that are taught by amazing professors that you can just take. I've done it. Plenty of stuff I've done, you know, full coursework. I mean, I didn't do the essays and stuff, but I, you know, did the lectures and watched all that stuff. And it's awesome. I mean, it's unbelievable that that's possible, right? And then I didn't really have it. I mean, I'm trying to think, like, when I was at school, so I'm, what, 27 now, so 10 years ago or whatever, the Google system wasn't really where it's at today. I mean, they were at the point, I suppose, where they were like, don't use Wikipedia. Like, find your sources elsewhere. And that didn't make, you know, that was just sort of where we were at, where it was like, there's some information, but it's not nearly at the level that it's at today, right? And so are you finding that kids are using YouTube personalities, or, you know, like Khan Academy or things like that, to supplement their learning?
Very much so, yeah. Parents are big fans of the online tools for that. Mm. And I know myself, when there's a concept that I need to buff up on or understand in a different way, because that's something as an adult learning things in the how and why instead of the what. Sometimes it takes a bit to go back and remaster a concept that way. And I think YouTube is a fantastic place for that. There are just some of the people have made infographic cartoons that really simplify contexts that they're amazing. And I'm so glad that people have information out like that available.
Yeah, and it's free, right? And it's, you know, always, well, I don't know about always, but it has no intention of always, you know, being cut off by costing, which is something that has been most of human history, being like, well, you don't have access to this education level or information. And now it's there if you're wanting to look at it, right? And so how is tech, I mean, listen, I know this is a huge question, but it's like, where have you seen the main impacts of technology with like young kids in their learning processes?
I would say I've seen it, especially during the pandemic, is just the use of social media for things to help them learn. So having a person do an experiment with people on Zoom where everybody does it and shares what they do, and that's like all over the world. And then you get to kind of experience that maybe this country doesn't have the same materials you do. Mm. And to talk about that, like, how could we adapt this experiment? I think it's making it more accessible to everybody. So not just scientists' kids are using these things. This is for everybody, which I think is really important. So you see kids doing challenges. They have all those silly challenges kids do on TikTok and things, but you can make challenges that are science. You can do, like, I had a video that got, I think it was 1.7 million views, and it was food coloring in water and oil. Wow. And people started trying it. And it was just like, because they were like, huh, it can't be that easy. Science in my kitchen? And it's like, no, it really is. Like, you can do this. And so I think that's where I at least have been focusing the last year and a half of my life, is focusing on the use in social media. But I have a friend who teaches at the college level. And one of her finals that she gives is that you have to make a meme. Okay. And it has to explain a concept in the meme of biochemistry. And cool. They're amazing because you have to really understand the concept to make a joke about it.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love that. I wish I had some questions like that when I was at university. That would be cool. Because you do. And you also have to be creative with it. And, you know, it's not just give me the answer. It's like, well, do you really understand the answer that you're talking about now, right? But I just to back to your point about the science in your kitchen, like, I think that that's a huge place to be able to engage with kids or even adults. Like, I mean, I like to do fun little science stuff if I come across it, and I'm not a kid. Even if it's like food coloring and water and soap, I'm like, that's cool, let me try it, you know. I mean, I tend not to video it and then post it, but I'll certainly try it and be like, that's awesome, and be super impressed with myself and with the person who sort of came up with it, or I saw the video and being like, oh, what else can I do, right? And then, because it really does, it gives you something to do. You know, it takes you out of your sort of normal daily existence of boring stuff or watching TV or whatever you do for most of the day, and you get to actually do things. Right, which I think is huge as well.
And you have this sense of, it feels a little powerful that you were able to do this experiment. Like, you feel great about yourself. Like, I just did science in my kitchen. I feel great. But that's the key, I think, is that things need to be in your kitchen. They need to be things that everybody has access to. Or materials that are very cheap at the grocery store. So it's not just people who can afford expensive science kits, of which I have nothing against those. Those are great. I use them a lot myself for things, but there are also cheaper alternatives, such as baking soda and vinegar, that you can use to teach so many concepts. And it doesn't have to add to your day. It can be part of your day. Like, it's not this extra thing you have to go out and figure out. You can just do it because someone showed you how.
And it's fun, right? And you do really get that sense of satisfaction when you do it. You're like, oh, I did something. You know, like, I created something. Even if there's no, like, final product that you can have or use or do something with. You know, if you just make like baking soda and vinegar, it's like you're like, it's this cool little explosion that happens and you're like, that was awesome. And I mean, it's, you know, you pour it out and it's gone, but it's still fun and it's, you know, cool to do. And then you transition that, like, as we were saying earlier, like into cooking, where you're like, oh, I take all these little ingredients and I do some science and magic with it, put it in a, you know, hot box and it comes out a cake. And you're like, how does that that doesn't even make sense if you think about it. But then you can learn why it does make sense, right?
Yeah, definitely. And you can use s'mores a lot to do things like that. So I do chemical and physical changes. I think if you just break things down into the basics, is it a solid, a liquid, or a gas? Did it change? Did it not change? That can actually help explain a lot of stuff that happens in your house. And so whenever we do something like cooking or melting chocolate, like, is that chocolate still chocolate? And it is. Once it dries back up, it's still chocolate. But when I fry an egg and the egg white turns white instead of clear, that has changed. Something is new and it can never go back to the other. And so by getting them at like ages 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, like right there, that age group of making sure that they're looking for patterns and they're looking for these changes of whether they occurred or not, that's going to help them so much down the road.
Right. Because we tend to just think we know something because we've seen it a bunch, right? Like you fry an egg and you're like, oh yeah, you fry the egg and it turns white and then you eat it and it tastes, it's you know, more solid than liquid afterwards. And you're like, yeah, that's just how eggs work. And then, I mean, but there's so much more to it than that. Right. And I mean, it is like you can write a PhD on eggs, probably. I'm sure people have. But it's true. Like, it's an important point to not like disregard all the small things that for a, you know, little human are all new and don't always make sense because it's not intuitive necessarily. Right.
And that is really important for parents to think about. Because a lot of the things that we take for granted, they have no idea.
Yeah.
They're 3 and 4. They don't know what gravity is. They don't know that if I drop a ball, that's why they keep dropping their food. Because they're like, why is this happening? Trying to figure it out. And so, like, for example, making ice cubes. Mm. It would be so much faster to just make them yourself or correct your child. But it's better for their learning if you say, how do you think we make them? And get an ice cube tray and do what they ask. So like my son, he suggested maybe we put it outside on a hot day and it evaporated. And so he had to think about that. And I said, okay, what's next? What do we try? And he was like, okay, let's try, you know, and he came up with these different ways. Finally got to the freezer. It took longer than I would have liked because I just wanted to correct it. You know, like, no, this is the answer. But he got something out of this whole experience that one day when it was raining and it got really cold and it started to sleet a little bit, he said to me, Mommy, is that water turning solid because it's cold like our popsicles? And I was like, never had to teach you that because you just built this on your own. Wow. And I could have just corrected him and shot him down and then he wouldn't have ever asked any more questions. So there's this moment that you have to like take a step back, and it's really hard as a parent, especially as a scientist parent, to do, to let them be wrong.
Yeah.
But it all gets fixed in the end. They have life experiences that will change it and they'll move on. But by letting them explore it, it's just, it gives them a whole new approach to the world.
Right. And it's not that, I mean, you know, it's 3 and 4 or 5 year olds. Like, they're not going to remember this experience necessarily when they're an adult. But what it gives them is a way of thinking and approaching the world. Right. So it's not that it's all about like the result that you're getting from this little thing. It's more thinking about it in the terms of like, well, how you're setting your kid up to think and see things, right? And try and understand and make sense of the world.
Right. And to think that their ideas matter, which is important.
And that they can be wrong and it's fine. They just got to keep trying till they find out what works, right? Instead of like putting the water outside and it didn't work and then being like, oh, well, I'll never know now, you know, or just being like, someone always knows the answer, so I don't need to figure out anything.
Or if I just said, okay, we're just going to put these in. Because it's kind of like when you're on your way out the door with your kid to go to some place. You're like, hurry up, put your socks on. Let me do it for you. Like, you're taking too long. And it's, but it's so much better for them to do it themselves and get used to that. And it's just this thing as a parent. And it probably only happened to me because we were in a global pandemic and I had all the time in the world. But I was like, you know what? Let's go for it. Let's do this ice cube experiment.
No, it's great. And also, you know, as we were saying, like for little kids, I mean, the concept of a fridge or a freezer isn't immediately apparent, right? Like the whole environment that you live in a house is warm, usually, hopefully, I suppose. And then you've got this box in your house that's cold and one that's even colder. And it's not exactly clear why that's the case. I'm just trying to think like a inquisitive kid being like, you know, this is a very strange box that's cold, and then you put stuff in and it comes out cold. You know, like, how does that happen? And, you know, why does water change to liquid to solid? And I mean, there's a whole world that you can explore with kids if you're just willing to take the time and listen to them think it through without jumping in with the answer that you already know. Right.
And then you understand where they're coming from, which is really helpful, because I got advice last year. I can't remember from who, but it was somebody told me that only meet someone where they're at.
Yeah.
And so if your child asks you a question, answer it the question they asked. Don't give them all that extra detail that you wanted to add because you feel like you need to teach this to them. If they just asked you a yes, no question, you can answer yes or no and just let them move on, and they'll ask for more when they're ready for it. Yeah. And I think that that's very much the case with this process, is that that gives you a chance to see what kinds of questions are they asking. Are they even ready to talk about this part yet? You know, and
they will ask
questions. Am I meeting him where he is?
And they will ask, because kids ask a lot of questions.
A lot of questions.
Yeah. I suppose because so much just doesn't make sense yet, right? They're trying to just understand, and they're looking to you as the parent to be like, well, you're supposed to explain it to me, you know? Like, this is, I mean, I don't know if they're thinking that necessarily, but that's the sort of, you know, underlying motivation of it, being like, you provide and show me how the world works, so why is this the way it is, right?
Yeah, and that's just such a great opportunity to sit down and learn about it together.
Yeah. And
bond. I can't remember what we were doing that we had to use a siphon. I think it was to get water out of something. And we were showing my son how that works. And he was just like, wow, you know? And it was like, but we did it with a little tiny setup to show him what we had done and to explain it. And he just was blown away by it. Now, does he remember it? I don't know. But he at least thinks to himself, I wonder what this would look like if that was the way it was.
Yeah. And also, I mean, you know, I'm sure, like, I haven't been a parent, but I'm sure, like, a lot of it, you kind of get the sense of the time of, like, is this worth doing? You know, they're not going to remember. Like, it's just a question, or it's just a this, and it's easy to dismiss it because you got more important, quote unquote, things to do, right? And that then takes away from the experience that the child's having and how they are learning to see and interact with the world and with you and with people, and that sort of sets up how they might start just doing everything, where they learn to not ask questions anymore because they don't like the way they get answered. Or that, you know, people aren't interested in explaining things to them, or interested in them, or interested in whatever it is. And then that ends up having, you know, potentially lifelong consequences as well, right? So it is really about investing that time in your kids when they're young, even though they aren't going to remember it per se. You're setting them up to be a good, nice person
later. To build those skills, yeah.
Right.
Definitely.
And to have confidence in themselves and their ideas about that it's okay to ask questions and to not know the answers and to, you know, enjoy the majesty of the world and the universe and see all these cool things and then learn about them where we can. I mean, I suppose there aren't answers to everything, but that's okay too. Maybe that's what they'll do. They'll go and find answers, you know. Maybe that's what they'll want to do. They'll be like, no one knows how this works. I want to know, so I'm going to learn and I'm going to see if I can find the answer. And hey, that's how inventions come about, or discoveries, or whatever it is that someone wants to know more than is currently known, right? And they're prepared to do it.
Yeah, definitely. And with kids, of how you said, you know, like, are they ready to learn this or not? Are they even interested in this? One of the things that I really had to stop myself from doing was thinking of it as a trajectory like this, that during the pandemic, I need to teach his ABCs. He needs to know how to count this much. He needs this. And it's like, I need to take a step back and we're going to go with what he's interested in and we'll work on those things and we'll see what comes of it. And so turns out he really likes anatomy and the human body. And he is playing with like 7-year-old puzzles and things like that, where he's like learning all the body parts and what they do for each other and all this stuff that I never, ever would have set out to do and never would have said he was ready for. But right. Because I listened and I helped him guide this interest, we now have this like very specific interest that he works on. But then he's also learned these other things because I use that as a background to teach the letters and this other stuff. But I definitely never would have said, yeah, let's get an anatomy puzzle for my 4-year-old. But no, he actually really likes it, you know?
Yeah. And if you take the time, you know, you could say, take a set of anatomy and find all the A's and B's and C's and D's and say, look, A and B and C and D. And that's, these are the things that they, the words that they work. I mean, I don't know how to phrase it properly, but, you know, do it.
No, definitely. Because you're looking at words. And a lot of the things that, like, red blood cell, red. Red is one of the, like, sight words, I think. And he knows that word. And so he'll actually look at a picture and be like, I think this is about red blood cells. Am I right? And it's like, yes, you are. You know, and, like, he just works on it. But he just finds that so interesting. It's really, it's a funny interest.
Well, no, listen, it makes sense, right? That's, he's of your genes and you had that same interest.
That's fair. I do think he'll end up being a surgeon someday, but I'm not going to push that on him. The day he stops wanting to do these puzzles, I'll move on to something else.
See what else is coming. You never know.
Yeah. You know? Who knows what these kids will do?
Or what will be available at that point, right?
Absolutely. Like, I mean,
It is. We live in such a weird time right now where the future's so uncertain, not necessarily in a bad way, but just in terms of like, where, I mean, can you imagine what technology will look like in 10, 15 years? Like, it's really difficult, right? Because science fiction is now reality for a lot of things that we have. I mean, the fact that we're able to have this conversation is pretty mind-blowing, right? And I couldn't explain it to a kid how it works. All I could say was like, well, I guess some, you know, something on this computer captures the picture and the sound of me and sends it to Stephanie. And then the same thing happens. And then here we are. And then that's like the limit of my explanation of this magic that we can have a conversation across countries, right? In real time. I mean, it's really unbelievable. So who knows? Maybe we'll see a hologram of, you know, each other in the future, seeing in those conversations. And maybe, you know, maybe your kid will design all the body parts for the hologram. Who knows? You know?
Maybe.
All these jobs that just we don't know about at this point. But anyway, so in terms of like, you know, recommending a place for parents to start, right? Just with their kids. Like, I know we've sort of, you know, been covering it throughout this episode, but do you have any like specific ways that parents with younger kids can just start learning about this stuff if they, you know, listen to this and find an interest in it? Like, where should they begin?
Yeah, definitely. I think that a good place to start is there's a genre of STEM for babies books. I wrote a book that falls into that category, and there are some other great authors that have content out there. And it's a really fun way to get kids to think like a scientist and use things around them to help them understand. And then I would use what's out there. There are people like me who have Instagram, YouTube, TikTok kind of accounts, and all they they put the stuff up for people to consume and to try it themselves. And if you have questions, right, you can ask them for help. It's a great resource for parents, and I would highly recommend those. And if you've got some money to spend, like, and it's a gift for someone, there's like Kiwi Crate is a great one to start with. My son loves those. And then Mel Science for the older kids. They actually just came out with a kids one as well. That's great. Mm. So like my son and I think it was the Mel kids one. We made a hydraulic lift. And I'm going to tell you, as an adult, I'm embarrassed to say I had no idea how they worked. It was like magic for me. And I knew it had something to do with water, but I couldn't tell you what it was. And we built a hydraulic lift together. And now my son asks me if things rise the same way as that lift we made. And I'm like, that is so cool.
Yeah. And so are these like kits? I mean, that you're
They're
talking
kits.
About? Kits, yeah.
Yeah, the two, Kiwi Crate and Mel Science. Those are both kits that come in the mail. And they've got different subscriptions where like you could do a one-off or you could do a monthly or things like that. So I know people who are homeschooled or like to do these kinds of activities on weekends like that. But like I said, there are definitely like websites and Instagram accounts and places that are dedicated to at-home science that you can do with your kids.
Right. And your book's called Let's Learn About Chemistry. Right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So people should check that out as well. A fun read for
you.
Yeah,
and it's available worldwide. And it has an ebook that is only 99 cents American. Oh, wow. So whatever that translates to everywhere else, I'm not sure. But it's very affordable so that you can use it anywhere.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I suppose, you know, just thinking off the top of my head, like another place to start is like to just ask your kids what they're interested in. Right. If you don't know, then you can just say, hey, like, what do you feel like learning about or something? I don't know what the right question is, but figure out an interest and then go and find stuff online of that interest that you can then bring back and be like, check what I got. Like, look at all these dinosaurs or I don't know, whatever it is. Right.
Definitely. Like, if you have an interest in dinosaurs, there are entire months of lessons that you could do with your kid that are documented online. Yeah. And so that's a great first step, is figuring out what's a true passion of theirs.
Mm-hmm. And then showing them the whole world that exists about it, right? And how much fun.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's true. There must be things for just about everything now, especially with worldwide access, right? I mean, people must be creating things for everything that you could possibly think of being interested in.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, right? But it's awesome. I mean, I remember just on the side point, like, we used to get those little, like, foam pills that you used to throw in some water and they would expand into a dinosaur. And that was magical as a kid. You know, you were like, you're just birthing a dinosaur. And that was cool. So, I mean, I don't know why that memory came to mind, but it's just something where you're like, if you have an interest in something, then there are a world of things that you can do with your kids relating to it other than just like, you know, playing with the toys or whatever, right?
Definitely, yeah.
Well, great. So listen, would you like to tell us where people can find you on your social media channels and things like that? Like, where can we see your stuff?
Yeah, I'm Let's Learn About Science on Instagram and TikTok, and I believe Pinterest, that's my handle. And then my website is letslearnaboutscience.com.
Okay, cool. That's great. And I would encourage people to check it out. It's cool stuff. Do some fun things with your kids. And, you know, who knows? Hopefully it'll be a better year this year than teaching at home. It has been for the last 2 years, so good luck to the world. But thank you very much for coming on the show today. I appreciate it. It's been a wonderful conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. Hey, we'll speak soon. Take care.